all, you have to think about what is the popularity of a detective in general? And there's sort of two basic schools of thought on that. One is that we're very interested in crime. And you can see this when you look at the television schedule and see how many shows out there are about crime. And we're interested in subversion, when someone commits an act that breaks the rules, that breaks the laws. And we're interested in the detective figure who comes around and fixes it, who solves it. But the other idea is that detective fiction is epistemological. It's about how do we know stuff.
That's your favorite word.
I love the word epistemological, as my students will tell you. And I feel like Sherlock Holmes represents rationality. And when we're thinking about how do we know what we know, we can go from supernatural to the rational. And even in Doyle's initial stories, he does that. He presents stories like The Sussex Vampire, Hound of the Baskervilles, in which it looks like there's a mystery that's supernatural. And then Sherlock Holmes comes in and tells you, no, we can explain everything.
He is classified as an armchair detective, which was one of the early forms of detective that you identified in your book, Dime Novels, and the Roots of American Detective Fiction. Mm-hmm. You were surprised to see such familiarity in the detective form, in the story form, as we found in the 20th century. Why did that surprise you so much?
Well, so it's really interesting because our narrative of detective fiction tends to start with, we've got Poe in the 1840s, and then we've got Sherlock Holmes in 1887. For a long time, we didn't pay much attention to the detective fiction in between those two. And then we say, okay, so Sherlock Holmes, armchair detective, he's just sitting on his couch solving mysteries with the information, which isn't exactly accurate to the stories. And then in the 20s, we get the hard-boiled detective in California.
Sam Spade.
Tough guy.
Those guys.
Exactly. And then in the 50s, we get the police procedurals. We get McBain. We get Dragnet on the radio, television. And then in the 80s, 90s, we've got like much more diverse group of detectives.
Well, then we have the more reality-based NYPD Blue.
Yes.
and those types of
absolutely, which come
shows.
Right out of the police procedurals
right.
of the 50s. But what I found when I was looking at detective fiction of the 1860s, 70s, 80s in the dime novels, before you even get Sherlock Holmes, you've got all of those things. You've got police procedurals. You've got hard-boiled characters. You even have really diverse characters. And boy, you can imagine my surprise when I see an 1881 dime novel with a gay detective.
Highly unusual.
Totally unexpected.
Now, there is a connection to Connecticut with William Gillette, who portrayed
Absolutely.
Sherlock Holmes in film and on stage. And then sort of after that, there was this roster of people. There have been 21 radio or audio versions of Sherlock Holmes, 37 stage productions, 40 films,
wow.
27 TV or direct-to-TV films, mm-hmm. 30 television series, and of course, Basil Rathbone as Sherlock Holmes and Nigel Bruce as Watson in the 30s up to the early 50s, 16 films.
Wow.
That's a lot.
I knew it was a lot, but that's an impressive array. Yeah.
And if you go and look it up, the top 100 mystery novels of all time from the Mystery Writers of America, The Complete Sherlock Holmes by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, is sitting at the top of the heap.
Absolutely. That does not surprise me in the slightest. And the Gillette connection is really interesting. William Gillette actually set a lot of the standards that we think about for Sherlock. The curved pipe, that comes from Gillette, rather than from the Conan Doyle stories. Ditto for even the phrase, elementary, my dear Watson, comes from the adaptations. And that's the thing about Sherlock, is he is so adaptable. It's interesting because when I teach the Sherlock Holmes class, the kids come up with all these different readings of his popularity, and there are like 30 different reasons. His relationship with his sidekick, his relationship with Watson is certainly one of the reasons.
Well, we have two very contemporary Sherlock's over the last decade or so. There's the Benedict Cumberbatch version,
yep.
Which is kind of on hiatus right mm-hmm. now. That's a BBC production. And we have the Elementary, which is the Johnny Lee Miller Lucy Liu, which is a complete twist with Watson being a woman rather than a man, but still being a physician, which is key to a lot of things with Sherlock Holmes. Is that part of the adaptability? Because if you look at these contemporary versions, of course, there's technology that didn't exist in the original.
Right.
Although Sherlock was a forensic detective, so he sort of was breaking ground with that.
Absolutely.
When Conan Doyle, who was a doctor himself, wrote those stories. So does it fit that well?
Absolutely. Yeah, so Sherlock, who was always writing monographs on forensic things like 18 kinds of cigarette ash or whatever, he was always using forensic techniques, early forensic techniques, but that are very, very easy to adapt. So when you mentioned that Watson is a physician, that's really important. Watson knows a lot of stuff. Watson's adventurous. And it's funny how you say that Sherlock is the armchair detective, which is how he's often portrayed. But those two guys are out there at crime scenes, and Watson carries the pistol. They have all sorts of adventures that are really, really easy to adapt. Of course, today we have such an interest in the Victorian period. And the two ways to adapt are to bring Sherlock into the 21st century. And then you also get some film versions and probably some of the older TV versions that really double down on the Victorian piece of it.
Now, you've done several pieces since your book came out about fiction, about detective fiction, and in other areas. Why is this still coming up consistently in study? Because you would think with as much as has been out there for so many years, we're talking about the late 19th century, and we're into the 21st century, more than 100 years.
Yeah.
People are still looking at it this
different,
trying to find things that are new.
Yeah, and very, very easily finding things that are new. Because here's the thing about genre fiction. And by genre fiction, I mean detective fiction, science fiction, fantasy, romance. All of these genres, which people love to read, we love the repetition of the genres. But the best examples both repeat and innovate, right? And so there's constantly people using all of this sort of standard techniques. There's a body on page one. We as the reader are trying to figure out who did it. We get this intellectual engagement, this cognitive engagement. And then people have all these innovative ways of creating characters that are different or that are adaptations, but also creating different crime techniques, different relationships. We love genre fiction. And I do not anticipate a day when we say, that's it. We have fully understood the appeal of detective fiction or even the appeal of Sherlock Holmes, because we're constantly creating new products.
And if we go back to the origins of books and short stories, in one of your pieces, you wrote about the effect on the publishing industry with non-traditional working class readers and what they were interested in reading. How does that still fit in?
Well, I think it absolutely still fits in the sense of with the dime novels are the first, 10-cent books that are available. Well, they cost between 5 cents and 25. They were not all one dime, but they were really available to working class readers. And they told stories of working class life, of everyday life, that people could really understand and get behind and feel connected to. And they had working class heroes. And I feel like with Sherlock Holmes, it's interesting. Sherlock Holmes is a funny character. Almost every adaptation plays up the humor of his single-mindedness.
And his quirks.
And his quirks, exactly. He's a very eccentric character. But we as a reader, we often end up identifying more with Watson, who's just an everyday guy who's looking at his friend and thinking, wow, that guy's so smart and so crazy at the same time.
He's trying to cope with him.
And that's what I really like about Elementary, is that I feel like the Lucy Liu character, the way that they've written that show, she actually, more than other Watsons, deals with his illness. She deals with his addiction. There are a lot of jokes in that show. It's a very funny show in a lot of ways, but it's also a very serious show. To be who he is, Sherlock Holmes is also somewhat tortured. And that makes a lot of sense.
So now we're in the 21st century firmly, and we still have Sherlock Holmes, but we also have Law and Order reruns, and we have Blue Bloods and still NCIS and whatever else is coming down the pike. Where do you see that this format, this genre may be going, given the ever-present shadow of the guy in the deerstalker cap?
My next project is actually on mother detectives. The major movement of female detectives starts in the 70s. But since the late 90s, many of the women detectives in series as well as in book series as well as TV series.
But we're talking post-Nancy Drew.
Oh, yes. Nancy Drew from the 30s, 1930s. I'm really interested in this new movement of mother detectives who are working within this man's world of detective fiction, which is much more diverse than it used to be, and also juggling with the pragmatics of of parenthood and being a primary caregiver, but also working with the epistemological framework of detective fiction. My argument is that when you have a child, the way you know things changes radically because you now have a sense of lifespan that goes beyond your own lifespan. You now think of your child's lifespan in a different way. You think of the future in a different way. And detective fiction is all about the past, the way that the genre is organized. You start with a crime and you try to figure out what happened. What is the story that led up to the crime that I am beginning with? Parenthood is all about the future. What happens next to my child? And I feel like there's this really complicated but obviously cognitively pleasurable moment, since we're getting the repetition of these women detectives who are also mothers, that's a little different from the daddy detectives that we see. We also get, again, the collapsing of roles. I'm referencing a slightly older series, but something like Dexter. Dexter is a detective. He's a forensic scientist. And he's a serial killer, and he's a dad. And so that is a very complicated identity that creates for the reader, we want Dexter to get away with it. What does that make us? We love the moments where he, as a detective, is working with this other group of detectives. We already saw him committing the crime he's trying to solve, and that's a very pleasurable moment. So it's complicated. We're going towards very, very complicated roles and sliding roles, in my opinion.
Elementary, my dear Watson.